Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. I'm April.
And I'm Beecher.
And if I sound a little nasally or just congested and gross, it's because seasonal allergies are kicking my booty.
Hey, I had a cold in the first episode. I've gone back and re-listened to it, and I definitely sound nasally in that one. So now it's your turn.
Hey, as in, hey, fever.
Oh, my goodness.
Or just pollen.
Yeah, allergies can't affect your puns.
Yep, I'm so punny.
Yeah, and so I will say the best part of this for us has been all of the messages that we've gotten from people that have similar stories of or are going through similar things. And so just to give you all a heads up, April and I are talking about ways of kind of forming a community. We don't know necessarily the format or how that would work, but this would be a way that people with like stories that are deconstructing gender inside and outside of relationships, but oftentimes alongside their faith, it would be a place for us to connect and learn from each other and just have community. So keep an eye out. We'll hopefully mention some stuff on future episodes if you're interested, so we can get an idea of kind of the numbers behind it. Shoot us an email at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com if you're interested in joining a group like that once this series comes to a close in a few weeks.
Yeah, and we don't have details yet, but we've just received so many bunches of messages of people in very similar but different situations, and a lot couples. And I just know Beecher and I, looking back at where we were when this all started, like, we would have given almost anything to have a community where we could actually talk about it.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, this is something that for most of my life I was so ashamed of and thought this was a curse. And now realizing that this could be a blessing to other people, that I can say, hey, you're not alone. I don't have all the answers, but we can hopefully help each other figure things out. That's really healing for me.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today, April?
We're talking about our marriage again.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So we ended the last episode, I think, with me being pregnant.
Yes. She showed me a plate, if you remember, yes, with the pregnancy test on it.
Uh-huh. It was very, so clever, the way that I told
her. And in a moment, all of our dreams of traveling the world
dissipated.
We were in a one-bedroom apartment in a downtown area.
I remember the night that I told you that I was pregnant, we were sitting on the couch watching TV and a beer commercial came on.
We don't even drink beer.
We don't even drink beer. It was like Coors Light or something. And they were like a bunch of these young 20-something, like, hot people just frolicking on a beach drinking their Coors Light. And Beecher, who doesn't even drink beer, is genuinely so sad, like about to cry watching this beer commercial. And they go, I'll never be able to do that again.
Yeah, like that. I didn't even...
Like, you don't even frolic now.
I didn't even do that. Like, I didn't party. I didn't drink. I didn't go to beaches. I didn't do that. But I just realized that the opportunity was passed.
Yeah, for all that frolicking.
In order for me to do that, I'm going to be 50 once my kids move out of the house.
Yeah, so we are surprised pregnant. And in that same... So I find out I'm pregnant. And then 2 weeks later, Beecher got a little bit of a health scare, and so Beecher started switching up their diet drastically, and...
Well, this season was just so much up in the air, because April, we had come to the decision that April was going to quit her job because we didn't have any family near us, we didn't have the ability to really put the kid in daycare, we didn't think with it being cost effective, so we were like, okay, you're going to quit your job, and it was a one bedroom tiny apartment, we're like, we'll turn the dining room into the baby room.
I know,
and so our families are in Texas and North Georgia, and they're like, oh, hopefully you can move closer to us. I'm not loving my job at the church, I'm feeling very burnt out, I've been telling them that, and I'm getting really scared that when April quits, that I'm really going to be stuck in that job.
Then you'd be trapped, right?
Yeah. And so we really started praying for a direction on so many fronts. And I mean, I don't really want to get into the health thing too much because it really turned out okay. But at the time, I was really scared. It was the first time that I was dealing with something that was kind of unknown.
Yeah.
And unknown about the future, how we were going to bring a new kid into the world.
There's just a lot of stresses.
It was a lot. And I will say in this season, I went back to kind of what I did, you know, a year or two before. I was like, okay, great. I'm going to wake up and pray an hour a day. I'm going to do communion every single day and ask for healing and ask for God to meet with me. And, you know, I didn't get any miraculous healing or anything like that. But I will say some really interesting things happen. There was one night I had a dream where I went on stage and I was supposed to be just like accepting an award or something, but instead I ended up like preaching like a really intense sermon. And it was all around the verse of like, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. It's like in Hebrews. And I remember waking up the next morning and I was doing a daily like Bible reading, and the reading of the day was that chapter in Hebrews. And it was like right there, the verse I just preached on, like vividly the night before. And then I went to church that week and people kind of knew I was going through some health issues, and they just really came around me. And two different people came up and like, Beecher, I had a dream where you were speaking on stage. Beecher, I had a dream where you were speaking on stage. And my therapist, we didn't get into this, but my therapist, even a year before, had seen a vision of like April and I speaking on stage. And at the time, it gave us so much hope, because I was like, oh, okay, like I do
have
a future.
We're gonna make it.
We are gonna make it. And so like I'm very grateful for those visions, so to speak, in my life and other people's lives.
But we also didn't know how to take it, because neither of us like really wanted to go into like ministry or like start a church or anything, and at the time that was like the only concept that we had for like what that would look like, speaking on stage.
Yeah, and we're still, I mean, at the time we really believed it, and now of course we are looking back on a lot of things faith related and asking questions. But I mean, we're doing this podcast. We've just been asked to speak at a university in the fall. I don't know.
Imagine like, though, if we turned around and we're like they come up and like, I had this vision, you're going to be speaking on stage. And we're like, yeah, about gender identity, because Beecher's trans. They would have just fainted.
But like, that's this is the only subject that I'm passionate enough about to actually think we could do it. And no one ever told me what I was speaking about. They did say, I remember this, they said, you aren't preaching. You're not preaching. You're not a pastor. You're speaking about something.
That was what one of them said. Yeah.
Yeah, but I always thought it was going to be about movies, because we're filmmakers. Like, yeah. I'm going to show movies and talk about movies, and you know, we still
make
movies.
That's if it's even real, you know.
Yeah, yes. And it may not be, but and it's not something like we've got a picture up and we're like praying for.
Yeah, we just
for.
Remembered it because we're talking about this season, and that was a weird thing that kind of happened. But I will say the church we were at did rally around us, and everyone was gracious and, you know, was going to pray for us. And they all, I think, felt bad because we were just going through a lot, or a young little 20-something couple.
So in this season, we weren't just praying about health. Obviously, we're praying about how we can move closer to family and sustain a kid on the way. And out of the blue, a few weeks into this, like, intense prayer time, I got a call from a church that was in Atlanta, which is much closer to my family, and they wanted to hire me. I still to this day don't know how they got my number or got in touch with me, but they wanted to interview me for a media director position. It was going to put me within an hour of my family. I was like, okay, I'm feeling really good about this. So we went like really early January and interviewed there, and we both thought going into it that we were going to take it, and then we just didn't have a piece about it. We were like, This was nothing drastically awful about it, but it was just like, we don't have a piece about this. I think I didn't have a piece looking back. A big reason I didn't have a piece and I couldn't put this into words is I was getting really burnt out in church culture, and I didn't want to make a lateral move from a church to another church, because I realized like a lot of the same problems that I was just experiencing are going to be at this place as well. But I couldn't put that into words. I just knew like something felt off about it, that we just weren't supposed to take it. And so we turned it down with no other real possibilities. And literally, we were on the flight going home. We don't really know what the future holds. And on the plane, I look at April. I'm like, I have a master's of fine arts. I really would love to get in academia. Like, I could be a professor.
I remember crying. Not because I was sad that we weren't getting the job, but I really was just excited to move. Like, I felt like we were supposed to move. And I remember crying, being like, oh, shoot. I was really banking on this to work, and it wasn't working. I remember crying on the plane.
Yeah. Well, we were holding hands. We were praying on the plane about a job opening up in academia, and that I was going to apply to a bunch of jobs like 6 months from then. Yeah. And that was going to be after our first was born. But I was like, okay, we can just do it. We can make it work. Literally land the plane.
We're still in the airport.
We're in the airport. We are walking down the runway, and I turn back on my phone, and I have a text from a mentor that was from a previous time in my life. And he was like, hey, call me. And I was like, okay. And so I call him in the airport and he offered me a job less than an hour from my parents. At a university where I would be working in media services and I would have the ability to adjunct teach. And I look at April and I was like, and she's like, what did he call for? I was like, you know how that we just prayed for a job like an hour ago? I just got a call out of the blue because someone had just resigned that morning and I just known the guy and he called me and offered me the job right then. I didn't have to send in a resume or anything.
Yeah.
Like I was hired within 48 hours of us praying. And so it was taking less money. It was moving
way less money.
It was moving to the Bible Belt, but it was an opportunity for me to get in adjunct teaching, which I felt like I needed if I wanted to go into the academia higher ed route. And so,
So then we moved to the South.
We went from literally telling my parents we're not moving to Atlanta because that's, you know, we're not going to be close to you. To within
eight hours,
we're moving even closer than that.
It's a super small town. Super conservative, very small. And like, I'm originally from Dallas and I had told Beecher, when we were dating that I would never move to this place.
It's true.
And, definitely ate my words.
Yeah.
But
we just felt like it was right. We just prayed and the job opened once again. It didn't pay as much, but the cost of living was less. So yeah, we packed everything up in a trailer and we moved to the heart of the Bible Belt.
7 months pregnant. I am.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know why I went Yoda there, but yeah. Did even mention, sidebar, I had a terrible first trimester. I was super sick and threw up all day, every day. So we move. I'm 7 months pregnant. The first 5 weeks, we were living in a basement of Beecher's boss, which was very nice of them to let us live there, but I was just...
Well, we found a house pretty quickly, and it was...
We did.
A nice view, and it worked out. We were able to get it without a down payment and a number of things, and we're still in the house. Everything goes pretty well with the birth. Our beautiful daughter, Raylan, was born into the world, and it definitely changed things for us.
Yes. So I never got postpartum depression, but being postpartum, that baby was a terrible nurser, and I am very stubborn and prideful, and I was determined that I was going to get this baby to latch and to breastfeed because it was cheaper and we were not making a lot of money. And I was like, if I'm a woman and this is what my body is literally made for, then by gosh, this baby's going to nurse. So it ended up like her first month, she didn't really gain weight because she was just not a good latcher, which I didn't even know could be a thing. Just to paint the picture of how tired I was and just this season of life, I would nurse her every 2 hours for like 45 minutes because she was awful at it. And then I would pump for another 30 to 45 minutes after that. And then by the time I got through with that, I'd have like 20 minutes to do whatever I wanted before I had to do the whole thing over again.
All the couples listening that don't have kids are now like, hey, we're not having kids.
Yeah. And I mean, I could have just switched to formula, which would have been totally fine. And in hindsight, I would have not killed myself over it. But, that was just what I did. I was just very, very stubborn and determined. And it did end up working. Ended up nursing her for a year and a half. Spoiler. So I was exhausted during this time. She was also a terrible sleeper, up every couple hours at night, even without me feeding her. And I was going through a major loss of identity for myself because I was living in this new city where I didn't know anybody. I was pretty much known as Beecher's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And the feminist inside of me, which I would have never said I was a feminist because it seemed like a liberal word, you know, like it's very much demonized in evangelical circles, but I was very much a feminist. And I had this pride issue of like not being a stay-at-home mom. And then I felt like that's what I was, but I also didn't have any friends. And I was like, what am I doing with my life?
I mean, it was tough because you were used to having a job. You were going to be, I mean, you got your master's in journalism. We're going to be on like
Fox. I had big dreams.
You're going to be on Fox News and all these things. And you were a worship leader in Virginia and now you aren't a worship leader. You don't have a job and you don't really know anybody. And
right.
Yeah, it was tough.
And also we mentioned in earlier episodes, I've never been, like, a girly girl. Like, I definitely had some more quote-unquote masculine mm-hmm. traits, or I just didn't fit in with a lot of the really feminine circles. And I remember when we moved here, just being Beecher's wife and people assuming things about me. You know, I remember one lady was like, oh yeah, all the wives will get together with the guys that work for the media department, and we go and watch Hallmark movies. And I remember, like, inside being like, ew, that sounds terrible. I would, like, much rather do whatever the guys are doing. And so it was, like, constantly fighting this culture around me of people trying to put me in this box of, like, this perfect homemaker. And I didn't cook. I'm not a good cook. And I'm not the best at, like, cleaning. And, I mean, I do because I have to, but I don't enjoy it. And, yeah, I just felt like I was failing. Like, I was being a good mom. Like, I was, my daughter was thriving, so she was fine. And I did get enjoyment out of loving her.
I will say our daughter was thriving, but with a first kid, everything is just chaos.
Her nose has stopped up.
Oh, we're failing as parents. So yes, she was thriving, but I don't think we realized she was thriving.
Well,
she was thriving
in the sense that she was healthy. She was a terrible sleeper.
Right.
I remember we had long conversations of like, oh my gosh, do you think it's the passy? Do you think it's because she has gas? Does she need to poop more?
All your attention went to the kid. I mean, it was
right.
It was everything.
Is it because I'm drinking coffee? Oh, I had a cutout coffee. Because anytime I would drink caffeine. So here's the thing. I'm exhausted and I can't even have caffeine. That's hell right there.
Well, I mean, your entire life was this new kid in the world. And
yeah,
I will say I had a really hard time with that because I was used to, you know, me being a lot of your world. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really difficult on me in this season because I'm not sleeping either. I'm getting up at night. I'm going to a job during the day. I come home. All April talks about is the baby, which I understand. Raylan constantly needed April around. And I felt like the teammate that I had now had a new partner in a weird way. Like, yeah. Raylan needed her and needed things that only April could provide.
Well, and I remember telling you too, because I don't know exactly when it was, but you got really depressed and a little bit needy and were trying to talk to me about just your, like, anxiety around the gender dysphoria. But at the time, we were calling it cross-dressing because that was just the word that we had for it. And you were saying that you were having the urge to do it more. And I remember looking at you and saying, like, Beecher, I can't handle this right now.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to take this on. And I kind of abandoned you in that fight during this time.
Yeah. And so, like, I'd been telling April about everything, every time I'd gotten into something and stuff. But at this point, with April saying that, I remember thinking, like, okay, you're right. We're not sleeping. You've got a kid. You got a baby to take care of. I need to focus or at least keep this private. And so, yeah, it hit a lonely stage where I got pretty, pretty depressed because I was really on my own and I was getting into clothing more. I felt, once again, I understood in my head why April was spending so much time with Raylan and not me, but in my heart, I felt abandoned. So it was this weird, like, what I was feeling, what my head was telling me were at odds. But I was like, no, I just got to tough it up and deal with it. But I was going through a really hard time. Like I said, the putting on April's clothes definitely picked up the thinking about gender dysphoria because once again, you know, I'm going to work every day and mm-hmm. I'm in an environment that's not affirming or accepting, but I'm still dealing with dysphoria. So I remember like one day I had to walk between my office and like another office a lot. And I remember like practicing my feminine walk like there and back. And I felt like so ashamed. I literally got back to my office and started crying because I was like enjoying practicing kind of walking with my hips more, but I was also like mm-hmm. ashamed of it. I didn't have anyone to talk to. And it was this very kind of isolating, lonely time. And, you know, we looked it up later, but we absolutely think that I had a form of postpartum depression that can...
10% of men or of the father can get postpartum depression.
Yeah. And so I think that was it because I know for me in my life, whenever I'm the most depressed or most emotional or most all over the place, it's not when I'm hungry or angry or anything like that. It's when I'm tired. And we were both absolutely exhausted. You handle having less sleep better than me. But yeah, it was a really rough season and I didn't really feel like I had anyone to talk to. I will say, you know,
it was tough on our marriage too. Cause yeah, I noticed tough. Like you just weren't as nice to me and I probably wasn't as nice to you and we were just shorter with each other, but we were also going on so little sleep and it was just like survival mode, you know, like we just got to get through another day, just get through another day. At least that's where I was until I could sleep more.
Yeah, I would say somewhere in this season, I did start talking to a couple other people, some close friends of mine, just because I couldn't talk to April. And so I needed an outlet for that. And so, you know, I told a couple friends, and I was super vague with the terminology. Like, I don't even know. I'd be like, sometimes I get into things, or I get into April's closet, like super vague things, right? You know, I tried on my sister's clothes in fifth grade, and like, it was like super vague, and it was very much like, this is what I struggle with. This is what I deal with. And then, so I know, like, oh yeah, this is what was also hard is April and I, since we'd been married, basically if April would leave the house for an evening or for a weekend, I would also leave the house for a weekend or an evening, because I knew I couldn't trust myself to not get into April's things. And then of course we have Raylan, and
I don't go anywhere.
but you did some.
Yeah.
And when you did go somewhere
when she was a little older, yeah.
Yeah, for like 3 hours. I can't go anywhere for 3 hours. I've got to stay in the house with Raylan because Raylan.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, I don't have that freedom to get up and go. And so now I'm like, what? I'm at the house alone and I'm not allowed to leave? Oh, shoot. And so I remember, like, maybe you got involved in a new church a little bit with like a worship team that we were going to a new church. You got involved in the worship team. I remember for practices, I would have to like set up things for me to do. I remember we got a piece of IKEA furniture in, and I waited like 4 days to put it together because I was like, no, I'm going to do it when you go to worship so I don't get into any of your clothes.
Oh, I think it was a small group I was going to.
Yeah, it was something, but you were going to something every once in a while, and I would have to plan something that night. And then if I couldn't plan something, I would call a friend that I told, once again, very vaguely to, and he would come over and just keep me company. And it was never fun because I'm literally feeling like I have to be babysat because I don't trust myself. I don't have enough. I don't have enough self-control to be at my house alone. And it was humiliating and it was sad. And when the friend would come over, anxiety would still be a central part of it because I knew I could get into it. And like, if that friend left 10 minutes before April got home, that 10 minutes was so hard. It'd be again, like this pacing back and forth, trying not to get into things.
Well, and once Raylan got a little bit older, like closer to a year, I kind of put myself back in and would like listen more, and we started having more and more conversations. And at some point in here, we try to start incorporating it some in our sex life. Cause I remember having this talk of like, well, one, we were still using sex as a band-aid once, you know, the doctor cleared me after the baby. That definitely was like a way that I felt like I could help. But then we started, like, I remember one time, and it was, like, small things, because I wasn't
ready. It was, like, negotiating, because I was ashamed that I would want to wear anything, and then you would be, like, how about this? And I'd be, like, well, how about this? And how about this? And how about this? And
I was, like, negotiating. I feel like we started really small. It was, like, pink socks, and then I let you wear one of my necklaces.
Which is also, like, yeah, there was so much still, even in that, though, there wasn't freedom. There was still so much shame around it, like.
Yeah.
Because I had so much, I guess, transphobia or gender phobia, that it was like, I'm ashamed that I want to put these on, but I'm putting these on, but also it's humiliating. And so our sex life did not get any better, but it was an effort on April's part to try to help. But it was literally like
because I was seeing that clearly, like, the praying, the rebuking, like, all of that stuff wasn't working. So I feel like now we're trying to figure out, how do we live with this? Like, we know that there's something here. It has to deal with Beecher wanting to wear women's clothes. And I remember I was talking to my friend, because I got Beecher's permission, because I also didn't have anyone to talk to about this as, like, in the supporting role as the spouse. And I talked to one of my best friends, and she's also happens to be a clinical therapist. She's not mine, she's my friend. But I was telling her about it. And I remember she freaked me out because she was like, are you sure that this isn't an identity thing? And I remember like spiraling a little bit because I didn't know, like, okay, if that's what this is, then what, you know, what does that mean? And I was like, I don't know. You know, we've never really allowed ourselves to ask that question because we're both, I think, scared of what the answer could be. But that was the first time that someone that I really respect kind of put the idea that this could be more than just an addiction or a fetish.
It broke the denial, I think, that you still had. Like, there were so many. I mean, you all have listened to the podcast. If you made it this far, there's been so many signs. so many signs. This is the first time that April thought it might be an identity thing. But I mean, I'm just thinking about this. Can we go back to the fact that wearing pink socks was like an hour-long conversation that was highly emotional?
They were my socks, but yeah, I know.
Highly full of fear, highly full of anguish and pain, and it's pink socks.
I know. It's just fabric.
No, I know. Like,
on your feet.
Like the amount of pain and suffering that we spent around things like that. It just, I'm so glad we're not there anymore. And it's really,
yeah, it's awful.
It's insane.
It's honestly really hard going back and even talking about this because I can feel the oppression or the repression, I should say. I could feel the repression and just, it was just so heavy and it was heavy for no reason. You know, like it was heavy because of the indoctrination that we were in the process of unlearning, but we were so entangled and like, no, men do this, husbands do this, wives do this, and Christians do this, Christians never do that. And
I know.
And like hell being a big piece of like, is this a sin?
Yeah.
Could this send us to hell? It's, it was so hard. And not having anyone to talk to on top of it, because as soon as you talk to someone, especially in the Christian world, they immediately would look at you differently.
And not only that, it's not just that we had the gender thing that we were trying to connect with church people about, but in general, both of our faiths, we're in a really odd place, right? I mean, there's a whole piece to this time period that we probably should hit on really briefly, and that's that Trump was elected, and we started questioning, like, where we belonged in Christianity in general.
Oh, 1,000%. If you guys listening follow me on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter or just friends with me during this time, it is no secret how I feel about Trump. Because I thought out loud many times because I could not for the life of me wrap my head around how these Christian leaders who I had respected pretty much my entire life, like the Franklin Grahams of the world and a bunch of other people, just like seemingly throw out moral compass to not only defend Trump, but to celebrate him. And so just like to recap, you know, I talk about what kind of led to our deconstruction. And this podcast is not about deconstruction, but, you know, our story is kind of what led us to where we are now in our beliefs. But for me personally, you know, I had really four big things that happened that led to my deconstruction. The first being my dad dying of cancer and not being healed. The second being Andrew, my brother, coming out to me as gay. The third being Beecher's gender identity. And the fourth one, and I honestly think this one out of all of them accelerated it more than the others, was Trump. Because like for me, so much of my political beliefs were intertwined with my faith and vice versa. Like I when I was in high school, I made a MySpace group. You know, I'm dating myself a little bit, but I had a MySpace group and the name of it was, I'm a Christian, therefore I'm a Republican. So in my brain, if you were a follower of Jesus, you were also a Republican. And it weighed a lot, like to be a good Christian. You went to church, you had your Bible, you prayed, you went to small group and you voted Republican. And here was Trump, who was so obviously the opposite of any Christ-like characters. And like, to me, it just kind of ripped the veil. It was just hard. Like, I couldn't unsee the hypocrisy that I saw in the church. And it just accelerated over the next 4 years after he was elected.
I mean, I remember when Trump came on the scene, we were like, oh, this will be entertaining. This will be interesting. And they're like, oh my gosh, wait, what? He's going to be the nominee? Wait, what? And like, up until this point, we had felt like we are the ones that are broken in the Christian culture around us. They've got it figured out.
Right.
And we need to conform and be more like them. And Trump was really the first thing where we're like, no, 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 no.
Right.
He is everything that we've been taught to avoid. And yet they're claiming and worshiping him. And so that was one of the first moments that we were like, wait a minute, maybe we don't belong and maybe we shouldn't belong. And wait, if we don't belong to this group, then where do we belong? And so, I mean, like,
yeah,
even before you got so passionate and where you are now, it was like a year of like so many questions of like,
so many
how
questions.
How every day I joke for like 4 years, April would be like, I don't know how he got elected. And not just how he got elected with, like, the electoral college, but how the evangelical culture that had taught us, we thought, to elect good people of morals and of character could go and vote for someone and wholly embrace someone totally opposite. So it started like this, like, weird, you know, we were going to a church at the time.
Yeah.
And it was hard because we're like, oh, wait, we're supposed to be fitting in with this new church, but we're not fitting
in. Well, and just to show, like, where we were, like, in the primaries of 2016, we voted for John Kasich, who was the more moderate Republican at the time. But we were still Republicans. Like, I would have told you in 2016, I am still a Republican. That's where my loyalties lie. And it came down to abortion.
I mean, once again, it just takes time to deprogram
yeah.
and reprogram. And we were at the beginning stages of it. Trump was the kind of the wake-up call. Did Trump getting elected change your views on gender or me or anything like that?
It wasn't overt. It wasn't like an overt change. But I think the people that had taught me everything, which would be evangelicals, Christian leaders, which I had grown up under my entire life, they taught me how to, like, they taught me what to believe and how to believe it and how to interpret scripture. And so seeing them, in my mind, be so wrong about Trump and like, double down after everything, like, each new scandal, I'd be like, okay, this is the one. This is the one where he's going to lose the Christians because surely they can't support that Access Hollywood tape. And then to see them not only defend it, but somehow like justify it and celebrate it, I was like, okay, I don't want to be like that. And so it kind of made me start questioning, like, what else have they taught me that I believed or currently believe that is also wrong? And so it kind of just made me restart looking at other things that I believed, because I knew I didn't know everything and I was still figuring stuff out, but I knew Trump and supporting him in the name of Jesus was wrong. And it wasn't just voting for them, but the fact that so many Christian leaders started turning it into like Trump prophecies and like Trump is God's chosen and God's chosen Trump to save America from the big bad liberal elitists. And it was just so stupid.
Yeah, and I do wonder, part of me wonders, if Trump had never come on the scene and was elected, would we have even gotten to the point of wearing pink socks during being intimate? Because I really do think it was like, well, of course it's wrong. Why is it wrong? Well, because all of these people that I respect and that tell me they have it figured out and religion and life figured out, they've told me this is wrong and they've taught me this is wrong and Franklin Graham and yada, 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 yada.
Right.
And then all these people running in the direction of someone who is anti-Christ made us go, well, wait a minute. Okay, we can't just live our lives based on what they're saying is right or wrong because they're clearly wrong on this issue.
Right.
So wait a minute. Let's look at this. And so I don't know. It wasn't something that we directly tied, but I will say when Trump came on the scene and you saw how much I was struggling with the birth of Raylan and the depression, and it was like this storm of
it was a perfect storm.
It was a perfect storm of questions, depression, but also maybe a little bit of room that we were able to try some different things.
It definitely started to feel more alienated from just the evangelical church in general, like over the entire presidency.
We were going to a church at the time. We were trying to fit in. We just moved here and I was trying it really for you more than anything, trying to give April a community.
I joined a worship team.
Yeah. Cause I was working a full-time job. I had a community. I knew people in the area. And so we were going to this church and we were like really trying to fit in with people. And I remember the pastor getting up and saying, we will never tell you who to vote for in this election. And it was right before the election. He goes, but we will tell you what to vote for. And it's pro-Israel, pro-gun, anti-abortion.
Pro-biblical marriage.
Low taxes. I mean, it was insanely
described
Republican.
Described Trump perfectly.
Trump and the Republican Party perfectly. And I'm like, you could rephrase this and be like, pro-the poor, pro-healthcare, pro-all those things are much more Jesus' platform if you're going to do, which I'm not for politicizing Jesus, but I'm just saying, it was just this, and that was actually the last Sunday that we went.
I was like, we're not coming back to this church. So that was in 2016 that we found another church. But I remember during those years too, I do a series on TikTok where I do like things I saw Christians post on Facebook, and really that was like birthed out of my frustration of things that I saw Christians post on Facebook. about Trump and other insane conspiracies and that somehow they wrapped scripture up in and like were calling it. It was just like crazy stuff. And like I would see with these Christian leaders and people that I would go to church with what they posted during the week. And it was some of the most like hateful, like bigoted stuff and pro-Trump and just like idolizing Trump. And then I would go to church and being the same building as them, worshiping the same Jesus. And I remember leaving church just so angry, and I really couldn't pinpoint it, but I just felt mad that I could read scripture about Jesus, who was selfless, who stood with the marginalized, who cared for the poor, who did all of the things that these people technically taught me, and then to see them celebrate someone who was for the rich, who exploited people, who said racist things, and we're sitting in the same room worshiping the same Jesus, it did not sit right with me. And this is something that I could literally go off of because it still gets me riled up because I still really don't get it. And there were even times because everyone around us, for the most part, like even, you know, from my dad's church growing up, like just the feedback that I would get for saying something so moderate. Like I remember I wrote an article in 2017 that basically was just saying like Jesus isn't a Republican and he's not a Democrat and like he's not even American. Like stop spiritually gaslighting people to vote a certain way because that's like not what Jesus is about. And the pushback that I got, like being called like being a tool of Satan just for saying that you don't have to vote Republican to be a Christian was just also very eye-opening on how quickly, you know, we were just, I was demonized just because I wouldn't vote for Trump.
And in this season, you're at home.
Right.
You have time to obsess over this, to talk about it constantly, to think about it. You watch the news all the time.
I did watch the news all the time because I thought at any moment we'd get in World War III.
Right. But also you didn't have the, like, I feel like in general, and I think you'd agree with this, like when you are confronted with something that is uncomfortable, you can disassociate a bit. You can distract yourself with other things, but you didn't have anything else to distract yourself with.
No.
You had a newborn that you're taking care of. And so
or baby. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I will say that that's going to be the limit that I allow you to talk about Trump because guys,
I really could go off on this.
Everyone out there, April LaJoy on TikTok, on Instagram.
I have a ladybug hat that is designated to me being a Trump supporter character. Yeah.
If you enjoyed what the last 8 minutes were, there's also a podcast called Evangelicalish you should check out on Wednesday nights. It's a live YouTube show. They talk about this very frequently. April's amazing. I love hearing her talk about it.
Beecher's over this conversation though because it's like kicking a dead horse.
I think it's really, I'm glad we hit on it. I think it really does connect to our journeys on this.
Yeah.
But I just don't think we're not going to let Trump overtake our podcast.
No. No. I've talked about him too much. I'm actually surprised or glad that we just talked about him now. And what episode is this? 8? Yeah.
So for future episodes, really the next episode, we are going to get in the season when we have our second child.
Second child, yeah.
And we start to incorporate maybe a little bit more of clothing into kind of what we're doing. But we also jump back and forth a lot. It's a lot of stop and go in the next episode, and it's pretty emotional. I hope you stick around for it, and it'll be out next week.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April Ajoy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.